the surviving populace, to tell them to group together for safety until matters settled down. How do I know this?
Shovel paused, hearing the muffled sniveling of the children. Some of his followers flexed trigger fingers. None of it was lost upon Shovel. He made it his business not to miss a single detail. Details could kill a person.
We found these special soldiers, Shovel stated with a trace of smugness. Or rather, what was left of them. Holed up in a courthouse of all places, surrounded by an undead army that might have been the entire population. The dead had been piled up around that stone and brick bastion like an ocean of bodies and limbs and teeth. Whatever weapons those soldiers brought with them, whatever tactics and strategies they used them, they unleashed with a wrath I dare say was spectacular, but to no avail. In the end, they exhausted their ammunition and killed the undead with broken-off broomsticks, chair and table legs, eventually bare hands and combat boots. It was the Battle of Thermopylae all over. If it wasn't for us, well, they would have certainly perished. As it was, we rescued the sole survivor of a team of 12. He had a choice, as you do. He could join us in the greater purpose of ridding the country of the scourge that devoured it whole, and once that was done, he could help us establish law and order, our kind of law. Of order. His choice. Well, he refused. In reality, he talked like politicians when asked a straight yes or no question.
Shovel smiled grimly at the memory of the battle, which had turned into a savage shouting match. Six stepped across one of the beams of light, interrupting Shovel's train of thought, and stopped inside the dark, more at ease there.
The same choice I'll offer to you, Shovel resumed. We need people. We need your skills. We especially need your children. Come with us as we search the country for like-minded souls. I'm not offering a return to the old ways, the old systems. I'm offering citizenship in a new world.
Shovel paused for effect.
But first, the kids, they come with us. Don't say a word and don't resist. If you do, not only will you be shot, but the two people on either side of you will be executed as well.
Soldiers moved among the captives and took six children away from the carpet of prisoners. The kids exchanged frightened expressions with their parents, but nothing more. Shovel was impressed. The soldiers herded the youngsters away and out of sight. The boys and girls ranged from 5 to 10. A tall boy was pushed back down. Shovel had deemed teenagers would be treated as adults.
Now, Shovel continued, any miners among you? Any doctors?
Nothing.
You're sure of that?
Again, none of the prisoners moved. It didn't really surprise him, but he had to ask. Skilled professionals and tradespeople were like two-legged slabs of gold in the new world.
All right, now then. Know that the children will be well taken care of, and in that time, this night will be forgotten. You will be forgotten, unless you join us.
One of the men face down in the dirt held a hand in the air. A soldier walked over and placed the squared-off barrel of a compact machine gun behind the man's ear, nuzzling it.
Speak, Shovel commanded.
Are you crazy? After all of this?
This? Shovel answered with a slow, disdainful shake of his head. This is nothing. You were all dead, really. Dead. You just didn't know it. This place, this farm. If it wasn't us, it would have been a clan far, far worse. You know, we actually discovered you a week and a half ago. You had no idea we were watching you. None. We had this whole place under surveillance. Watched your patterns, your routines.
We know who goes to the row of shithouses out back at what time of day, what time your lookouts changed shifts, regular, just like clockwork. We have a pretty good idea of who's cheating on who behind the barn over there. For days, we observed you, and you had no fucking idea despite all your precautions, all your defenses. Oh, they're fine against the dead, but the dead are all gone. What's left are scavengers. The gangs. Raiders. Tribes of road savages who roam the land looking only to butcher, rape, and consume. Highway killers bent on drinking down whatever's left in the world, preying on the weak. Shovel paused again. That's you, he clarified. From your viewpoint, we're the same. In some ways we are, I'll admit, but we're stronger, better organized, we have a greater goal in mind rather than just day-to-day survival. In this day and age, only the strong's going to get by. And you? Obviously, you just weren't strong enough. Sooner or later, someone was going to find you and slaughter you like little piggies. You could have asked, said the man. Asked? Shovel chuckled. And if you said no, would you expect us to just leave you just like that? Leave you, more specifically the skill sets you might possess, for someone else to come along and take, to utilize, to use your numbers against our own? What the hell are you talking about? Ah, Shovel shook his head. Like I said, you're all dead. Just didn't know it. Still thinking in old world ways. So we just join up, the man asked. Shovel smiled wryly. Whoa, partner, slow down. We'll see, after a test. We don't just take anyone. Like I said, the world as you know it is over. Only a special breed is going to make it. And I suppose it's time to see who's got balls and who doesn't. No disrespect to the ladies. Half the people with guns on you now are ladies. All the padding and body armor kind of makes us all look the same. I'm told it's a psychological thing. Sick, wearing his own menacing ski mask and standing a little taller than Shovel's 5'11" frame, stopped beside his leader and held out a toolbox. Shovel nodded in approval. So, who wants to become part of the solution? This is bullshit. You'll kill whoever doesn't sign up, said the man, eating dirt. Well, you're partially right. People are going to die here. Then we all join. Shovel sincerely doubted that, but decided he had to start somewhere. What's your name?
Riley.
Riley, you speak on behalf of your people?
Yeah.
Then I thank you for joining first. Stand up. Just you. The soldier with the gun at Riley's ear backed off. A cautious Riley got to his feet. Filth dusted his jeans and red flannel shirt. A thick beard hung off his face, and Shovel didn't appreciate the murderous glower. He recognized trouble right away. Always the way with the leaders.
Stay right there and pick.
Screwdriver or hammer? Shovel asked as Sick set the toolbox on the ground and pulled out the pair of tools.
Huh?
Screwdriver or hammer? Pick one.
What for?
Pick one, goddammit, Shovel barked. Riley jumped. The fire in the bearded man's eyes diminished with uncertainty, which was more to Shovel's liking.
Hammer, Riley muttered.
Sick tossed him the tool.
Now, Shovel said, who else wants to join?
A show of hands.
That one.
Shovel pointed to a short but stocky individual, another beard grower. It was the style of the times.
You get the screwdriver.
It landed at the man's feet.
Now, as I've said, Shovel explained, only the strong survive, and we only want the strong. But also we want a special breed of survivor, a survivor, you see. You two, step over there, away from the crowd, and don't run, don't you dare run, not if you value the lives of your friends still on the ground. Either of you run, we light up the works.
A glaring but understanding Riley and his companion meandered over to the indicated spot. Shovel saw the leader sense trouble. The farm boy wasn't stupid.
"Now," Shovel declared when the pair was clear of the others, "time for the hardcore. You got your weapons. Now you fight. Right there, to the death. We'll take the one who kills the other."
Riley appeared utterly stunned.
"You sick, twisted fucker.
If you don't fight, we shoot you both. If you think about rushing us, we'll blow your knees out first. We'll arbitrarily do the same to whoever is handy, and then you all get to see the next matchup from wherever you bleed on the ground. And I guarantee if that happens, the person shot will curse you and your family like you've never heard before."
"You're a fucking lunatic," Riley said in disbelief, his words vapor in the nearby headlights.
The stocky one, however, was considering it. He actually brought the screwdriver up to his waist in an underhanded grip, ready to stab, weighing his chances. That was his downfall. Too much thinking. Riley noticed that and immediately tossed his hammer into the dirt.
"You can go fuck yourself," he directed at his captor.
The stocky man, squaring off against Riley, eyed the discarded tool before looking down in shame, regretting his thoughts. Without a word, he dropped the screwdriver. A triumphant Riley focused on Shovel, and for a moment the tension grew and threatened to erupt any second. Shovel regarded the leader's smug expression of superiority, as if he thought he'd really won something by not playing along. Shovel frowned, truly despising self-righteous pricks like Riley.
"Shoot him!"
Three soldiers fired, the knife flashing and snapping. Bullets chewed into the two men while fragments sputtered and spurted from the front and rear. The impacts launched them into the air about a foot before they crashed to the earth in bloody lumps. Some people screamed. One woman bolted. She made it nearly 10 feet before a black-armed killer took aim and damn near cut her in half with an extended burst of gunfire. Everything died down after a few seconds. Steam issued from the executed. The people still on the ground sobbed and squirmed, replaying in their heads what had just happened. Shovel inhaled and appraised the situation, feeling the tension return and build once more. Fearful eyes looked up from the ground.
"Who's next?" he repeated.
Chapter 16. The morning was a dark shade of eggshell white. Gus rubbed at his eyes and stared at the ceiling, slowly coming to his senses after a deep sleep. Blankets from a linen closet covered him from neck to toe, completing a bunk he'd made on the comfy sofa. He felt guilty for resting, guilty for not being out there searching for Maggie and the kids. However, crawling forth into the night of Lower Sackville and Halifax wasn't a plan to him. That would have been more like asking for trouble. The captain stood at attention on the coffee table. Gus had placed him there the night before, but the sailor's smile got on his nerves after a while, so he turned him around to face the road.
"Give a shout if anyone drives up here," Gus had told him.
He hadn't drunk a drop the night before, proving to himself and the captain that he didn't depend on his wares anymore, that he could function without them, regardless of how tempting they were. It was just after 9 in the morning, sunny but feeling of winter. Gus threw off the blankets and sat up, rubbed at his eyes and face once again, and took a deep, sobering stare out at the cul-de-sac.
"What do you think?" he asked the officer, and allowed the silence to grow. "Yeah, let me get something to eat. We'll get moving."
Knee-high grass almost hid the fire pit in the backyard. Gus borrowed a handsaw from the garage and cut a few pieces of wood off a nearby elm tree, not so concerned about the noise. He put a lighter flame to some leaves, grass, and twigs, filling the fire pit. Within an hour, he was eating noodles, feasting on 2 packs of the aged delicacy. He wished he had some of the cured deer meat or beef that Adam and the boys had prepared for the winter, but that was gone with the storage shed, if it wasn't stolen. Probably shit a nugget, Gus muttered after finishing his breakfast. He made his way to a downstairs bathroom and was delighted to find toilet paper still hanging from a wall dispenser. After a meditative moment that lasted close to 10 minutes, he hoisted his jeans and went to the living room. He gathered up the Nomex gear and stowed it in the SUV. The leather duds he'd taken from the leather shop went on over his regular clothing. Having done that, he went to the garage and worked the crank, allowing the day inside. A man stood not 30 feet away, dressed in a black, knee-length winter duster. A pirate's stocking cap descended and snaked a couple of times around his neck. A trimmed tumbleweed of a beard graced his chin, and that, along with a wide pair of sunglasses, hid his face damn near perfectly. On any day before the apocalypse, Gus would have pegged him as a street busker. "Morning," the stranger said jovially and gave a ratty smile, his hands deep in his pockets. "Morning," Gus replied warily, glancing around.
"Sleep good last night?"
Gus fought down his first response to tell the stranger to go fuck himself.
"Yeah, I did."
"It's a nice house. Nice street."
"Yep."
Gus realized his bat was in the SUV and his knife was in his fireman's boots.
"You're probably wondering why I'm here," Stocking Cap said.
"I am."
"Saw you drive up yesterday. But didn't feel like barging in then. Figured to hold off until the morning."
"Good idea."
"Yeah, I thought so."
"You live around here?"
"Me? Hell no, I'm from Bridgewater."
"Come up here to look around."
"You got it. For food, mostly. Supplies. Anything useful."
"Just you?"
Stocking Cap nodded.
"Yep, just me. But don't worry, I'm not interested in fighting or killing or anything, just fair trading, if you're into that sort of thing."
"What if I'm not?"
Stocking Cap shrugged.
"We part ways."
"Yeah? Nothing else? You won't try to kill me?"
"Why would I want to do that?"
Gus stood right in front of the SUV's grill and couldn't decide what to do with his arms. He finally decided to hold on to his hips and hoped it didn't seem too confrontational. The coast still looked clear.
"A lot of bad people out here. Folks who aren't too worried about chopping a person up and leaving them for dead."
"Yeah?"
Gus nodded that it was a fact.
"Yeah, well, I'm not one of them," Stocking Cap established while glancing at the sky, straightening his back as if it bothered him. "Ain't that many people left, anyway."
"No, there's not."
"You know, you're the first person I've talked to in about 3 weeks."
"3 weeks, eh? It's a long time."
"It is."
"Well, I gotta get moving here," Gus said. "What was it you wanted?"
"Trade, mostly. Won't take long."
"Okay, let's trade."
"Got any ammunition?"
"Nope."
"Whiskey?"
"Nope."
"Nudie books?"
"Nudie books," Gus repeated.
"Yeah, just the regular kind. None of the weird stuff."
"Who the hell trades nudie books?"
"You'd be surprised."
"You mean more than I am now?"
"Well, okay. Toilet paper?"
"None that I want to trade. You running low?"
"Not really," the stranger admitted. "But I try to keep stocked. You can never have enough of that stuff."
They agreed on that.
"Just to be clear," Stocking Cap said, "you don't have any nudie books."
Gus winced.
"No nudie books."
"All right, then. Anything to eat?"
"When was the last time you ate?"
"A day ago."
That didn't sit well with Gus at all.
"Well, fuck it. I got some noodles and Kraft dinner, if that's okay."
Stocking Cap brightened.
"That sounds like a banquet right now. Need any nudie books?"
Gus shook his head, but then actually considered it.
"Nah, you keep those. The food's free. You got anything to drink?"
"No," the stranger replied with a shake of his head. "Nothing. But water's easy to come by. Actually came by some powdered Gatorade about 3 or 4 months back. Life was good. Anyway, like I said, plenty of water around."
"More than some things. Well, here."
Gus stopped and regarded the stranger cautiously.
I'm going to get it out of the back.
Jesus, thanks, man.
Just don't cook it up here, in this house, is all, he called out from the rear of the garage.
Something special about this place?
Gus returned from the back with a pair of KD boxes in hand and a pack of noodles.
Yeah, something like that. Listen, I don't want to sound all paranoid and shit, but how about I just toss this to you?
Ah, Stocking Cap said. How about this? You place it on the lawn there and I'll get it later.
That suited Gus fine. He walked over to the high grass and placed it on the ground.
How's that?
Great. Appreciate it, man.
It's not quite half of what I got, but he shrugged. Should keep you going for a couple of days.
It will, thanks, the beard smiled.
Well, Gus threw out and felt at a loss as to what to say next. Good luck.
Hey, you don't need anything? The stranger asked.
Not really. The only thing would be food, and I think we just covered that. Unless you got some guns stashed around.
Sorry, man, no guns.
Gus rubbed at the back of his head, felt the hair growing there, and realized he wasn't wearing his helmet.
Well, that's it then, I guess.
You sure? You don't want any nudie books?
That brought on a chuckle. No, man, I'm okay.
I got information, Stocking Cap offered.
That was something. What kind?
Where are you going?
No offense, but I'd just as soon keep that private.
Okay. Forgot myself. Haven't talked to many and all, you know. Well, anyway, you should know Halifax has become a bit of a nest lately.
A nest?
Yeah, Stocking Cap said. Road savages floating in. They don't want to talk unless they have you tied down, looking for guns and whatnot. Vicious. Almost got my ass shot off one afternoon down on Barrington. They chased me for 4 blocks before I finally lost them.
You been down there?
Yeah. City's a morgue. Bodies. Well, let's just say it's a mess.
Gus digested that.
You see anyone with kids?
Kids?
Yeah, kids. A little girl and boy. This high, he marked space with a hand, and a woman in her 60s.
Stocking Cap thought about it.
No, sorry.
Yeah, Gus nodded, feeling his stomach unclench. He'd put too much hope into that one question.
I did see a pair of pickups shoot up the 102 yesterday morning, however. Seemed like they were in a hurry.
That stopped Gus, and he considered the Stocking Cap man.
Pickups?
Help any?
Maybe.
Well, let me tell you this. I passed through Truro a few weeks back and actually went into New Brunswick before turning back. It's Wild West out there. Whoever's left over is gravitating into groups of survivors, coming here. Road savages, and they're not friendly.
Yeah, Gus knew from his own experience.
Thanks. Hey, thank you.
Stocking Cap nodded at the packaged food.
Where are you from, anyway?
Gus didn't think there was any harm in giving up that information.
Annapolis.
The Valley? The hell you doing down here? Oh, wait, looking for those youngsters?
And the lady.
Something happened?
Gus regarded Stocking Cap.
What the hell? 2 days ago, the people I'd been living with for a couple of years got executed on the front lawn. All except 4. I found one of them yesterday, dumped on the side of the road like so much garbage. I'm gonna find the others.
Birdsong drifted from beyond the cul-de-sac, filling dead air.
Listen, Stocking Cap said. Sorry to hear about your people. I keep out of sight a lot. Take risks as I see them, like here and now. But I'll tell you this. It doesn't really surprise me to hear about your troubles. In the last year alone, I've heard more gunfights than I can remember. Run into a lot of gangs, folks who are militant. And they're more than happy to put a bullet in you. Or worse.
Gus nodded. Thanks for that.
Stocking Cap waved dismissively.
The Valley had a lot of farms up there.
Still do? Still do. Most of it grows wild, but it was feeding us for a couple of years. Would have kept on, too, until this all happened.
Still got apple orchards?
It's all there, Gus said with a squint. Apples, melons, blueberries, corn. Hard work, but it's there.
Hard work doesn't bother me, Stocking Cap said. These days it's back to the basics or nothing.
Heard that. I suggest you head on up there, check things out. Bypass the city and head for the smaller communities past Greenwood, Berwick, those places. You'll find the farms. Livestock, too, if you can catch them.
This pleased Stocking Cap greatly. His beard moved when he smiled, and that time he showed teeth, or what remained of them. Gus kept a neutral face. He wore his own scars.
Good luck to you, then, Stocking Cap said.
Good luck to you, too, stranger.
Gus smiled at having tagged that on. It felt good. He got behind the wheel of the SUV. Stocking Cap offered a lazy salute and backed off, making way. A part of Gus, the paranoid part, warned him to exercise caution. Perhaps Stocking Cap had a companion with a gun sighted on him. Gus sighed.
If he did, Gus couldn't do a damn thing about it until after the shot.
That feeling of having just gotten off the farm made him uneasy. The world had changed, and he'd existed in a bubble during the most important parts. He eased out of the garage and drove past Stocking Cap, who stood aside good-naturedly and actually waved, causing Gus to let slip his prize-winning grin. A third of the way out of the cul-de-sac, he felt better about the encounter and glanced into his rearview mirror. Stocking Cap was already picking up the food. Gus stayed on the road, and after a minute, realized he was still alive. The gray lick of cracked pavement stretched out before the SUV like a dead man's tongue. All manner of vehicles haunted the road, some with sun-scorched corpses nearby, others just empty, as if their drivers had pulled over to stretch their legs and never came back. Black minivans, red sedans, a few sporty coupes, and others scrolled by. A few had left the road entirely and crashed into trees or run up sloping hillsides covered in yellow grass, their doors hanging open and drivers missing. Power lines drooped from steel frameworks along one side of the highway, their cement bases concealed behind trees. Roadside attractions and pit stops called to Gus at times, tugging loose memories of his younger days, when he and his girlfriend or buddies would rip out of town seeking the lure of the open road and a quick meal at KFC or some other food joint. Those moments seeped into his mind like bright poison, and Gus relived every one until his heart ached. The SUV stayed steady as he rolled northeast up the 102. Tall transports cast long shadows, giving him pause. He mistrusted their corners until he snuck past them. A comfortable heat flooded the interior, and the plastic reincarnation of Captain Morgan sat on its back in the passenger side, gazing up in bright merriment. The captain hadn't said a word, maintaining that gallant smile, and for that, Gus thought himself fortunate. The days when the old sailor did talk to him had to have been the darkest. Wide rivers and open fields swept past his windows. Green signs counted down the distance to each approaching town. A heavy truck had stopped under an underpass, its flatbed of cut logs still stacked high, and he shot past the shiny red beast without stopping. When his fuel ran low, he stopped and spiked gas tanks, losing more than he could catch in one of the Tupperware dishes, but eventually gathering enough to satisfy the SUV. During one long stretch of highway, Gus glanced into his rearview mirror and thought he detected movement. It bothered him enough that he slowed atop a crest and finally stopped and got out to peer back. He stood there, waiting a solid minute, and saw nothing. Being in such an open area alone was strangely disconcerting, even though his old house had been a respectable drive outside the city limits. It hit him that he'd driven into Annapolis pretty much blasted out of his gourd, unlike the present moment, when all his senses were humming. After about 10 minutes, Gus rubbed his bald head and got back behind the wheel. As an afterthought, he watched his side mirror in case anything was creeping up on him. Nothing did, however. The captain's smile seemed to widen. Gus stopped for brunch in the parking lot of a dilapidated building near the word Bingo, painted on a billboard facing the highway. He studied the word as he ate, repeating it in his mind, sensing a greater meaning he failed to grasp. The once bustling town of Truro came into view much more quickly than he'd remembered, and he stopped on a hilltop to gaze over it, eyeing large structures stamped with logos and brand names. He shielded his eyes with a hand, seeing the horizon rise up in a ring of frosty hills. A nearby sign pointed the way to Lower Truro and Bible Hill, but nothing drew Gus in that direction. Eventually, he drove off. Clouds filled the afternoon sky, and around 3:30, Gus started thinking about getting off the road and camping for the night. The highway, with all its deserted cars, reeked of melancholy that he didn't want to experience after dark. If he'd taken the right chemicals, he believed the shoulders of the road would be thick with the ghosts of motorists long gone. The land opened on either side of him, the pale grass sometimes divided by fences of trees. The road split more often into ramps leading to overpasses, but he didn't take any of those just yet, knowing the 102 would eventually loop around into the 104, which crossed like a T the northerly road he currently drove on. A concrete wall began on his left, crumbled in places by crashed cars, but one lane remained open enough for him to proceed. In the distance, another overpass loomed. Several trailers rested on the bridgework crossing overhead, and something at the back of Gus's skull sounded an alarm. His foot eased onto the brake pedal, slowing his vehicle. On the driver's side, several cars had mashed their noses into the concrete barrier. One minivan had two webby eyes perforating its windshield. Bullet holes. The sight drew Gus's attention, distracting him. A startling crack interrupted the hum of the SUV's engine. The windshield splintered inward, and shards screamed past his right ear fast and hot enough for him to feel its heat. He stomped on the gas, jerking the wheel to the right in a screech of tire rubber and a twisting lurch of his guts. Cars and pavement blurred, becoming landscape. The front wheels bounced over an embankment much higher than he expected. A pond rushed toward him, only barely glimpsed through the blinding tracery of the bullet holes. Then the dashboard exploded, and the world died. Chapter 17. Something hammered into Gus's stomach, forcing a gasp to explode from his diaphragm. Another blow made his darkness pirouette from the impact. A rumble of thunder reached him then, echoing off distant hills, sounding suspiciously like whale song.
Hit him again and put...
That string of words came to Gus in a tangle of consciousness, just before he drifted off once more. More strikes to his body felt as if they were happening perhaps 20 fathoms down in a very deep sea. He rocked, trying to swim, but couldn't summon his arms or his legs. The sensation of reaching for something occurred to him, which puzzled that one little still-functioning part of his brain. Then a sharp pain stabbed him, as if a ship had gone hard to starboard in his lower abdomen before the hull crunched into unforgiving ice.
"Dead, I'm fucking telling you. He ain't dead. Look."
Another blow rang him like a bony gong.
"I think he's waking. He look like he's waking to you?" "Fuck I look like, a goddamn surgeon general? I'm out of my element here. This is what I do best."
Laughter, distant yet resounding directly in his skull, ended with another solid crunch to Gus's ribs, pulling him out of that midnight stew of blackness by his arms.
"You do that very well," a voice said, middle of the road in terms of timbre. "I think I broke my fucking hand that time," someone winced. "I did that shit once. My right hand, too. Had to wipe my ass with my left. Think I remember that. You smelled as shit for a month."
More laughter. Good old boys just hanging out and shooting their mouths off. Gus almost smiled then, nearly surfacing right there.
"Look," another voice said, charged with discovery. "Fucking meathead damn just smiled that time."
"What?"
Edgar's right. That not-dead fucker smiled. He's coming around.
Fucking about time. Only been tenderizing his hanging ass for the last hour.
You fucking hit like a goddamn girl anyway, Murray.
Yeah, your mother said the same thing.
Don't you be saying shit about my mother. Don't you even fucking dare. That shit's disrespecting.
Sorry. Meant to say fuck you.
No, fuck you.
All right, lay off both of you. Jesus Christ. Murray's only pissed off because Fireboy wasn't a woman.
I am pissed. I was hoping for a prime slab of meat, not this.
Fuck, bro. You think you're the only guy here hurting for a piece of pink?
Yeah, but you got Ryan there.
Harsh laughter was drowned out by a low and menacing,
"The fuck you say to me, cocksucker?"
I said, a throat cleared in earnest at that point. On the good nights, when you need that little extra sweet lovin', Ryan even takes his teeth out.
You little...
Look, he's waking, another voice said, cutting off the discussion.
In his private darkness, Gus realized he was waking.
He should be. Lazy fucker been sleeping long enough. Goddamn son of a bitch truly is a hunk of hanging meat. Goddamn tired of this fucking bullshit nonsense. Let me cut his balls off. That'll make him holler.
Laughter. Someone moved closer to him. Gus tried to move his arms, but they weren't working. His chin rested on his chest, and his eyes opened, revealing his bare feet lashed together with a dirty piece of rope and anchored to a rusty tire rim. His shoulders ached in their sockets, and his ankles felt as if they suffered from extreme carpet burn. Cold prickled his skin. A mixture of bad body odor and motor oil enveloped him.
"Good morning, sunshine," a phlegmy voice said, greased in false cheer.
A tall, lean individual appeared, dressed in a woodsman jacket that had seen better days. Gus raised his chin and balked at a black-bearded brute with sparkling gray eyes, the eyes of a killer no longer fearful of exhibiting once-suppressed urges. Those smoky marbles glistened, taking Gus in, seizing him, and the beard hitched back into a sweet smile, revealing not the salmon pink of a healthy set of gums, but rather a viral lime green that might have taken root all the way to the man's brain. A pair of eroding incisors dotted the horrible mouth. If Gus didn't know any better, he would have sworn a mad trapper had come down out of the hills. The frightening visage raised a knife, a big, gleaming sword of a blade with a curved tip as tapered as a candle's flame. Gus lifted his chin further and pulled on his bonds, quivering in place like a crudely twanged bowstring.
"Shh now, shh, shh," Grey Eyes said, pouting dramatically.
His round eyes blazed with a feral craziness so bright it was difficult to tell if the man had eyelids. For the first time in his life, Gus felt genuinely fearful of what was about to happen.
"Been waiting all morning for you, sunshine," Gray Eyes whispered and smiled that maniacal grin.
Indistinct shapes crowded in behind him.
"Been waiting for you to open them pretty eyes of yours."
The knife's cold tip touched the fleshy bag under Gus's right eye, and he suddenly held his breath. He realized with horror he'd been stripped down to just his blue Fruit of the Looms. Gray Eyes kept his berserker smile in place and drew closer, his eyes growing bigger, impossibly wider, to the point where Gus didn't think he was a man at all, but some feral missing link, somehow mistaken for a man. Gray Eyes zoomed in closer while evil chuckles sounded around the edges of reality issuing from the watchers. Gus never had a chance to compose himself. He was trussed up good and damn near bowel-looseningly fearful. Gray Eyes' face started to tremble, as if 1,000 volts suddenly ripped through his frame, his eyes as maddeningly bright as headlights. The knife dug into the baggy sack below Gus's eye, and Gus released a whimper of terror. A shiny rivulet of scarlet streaked over his cheek.
"Do it, Ball," someone hissed anxiously in the background. "Hook that eye out. One flick of the wrist, bro. All that's to it.
Fuck yeah, I'm hungry here.
I wonder, another speculated, if an eye is on the cheek just hanging there, but like, still attached to whatever, you know? Like, can it still see? Or is it all swivelly and shit?
Insane Ball and his train wreck of a smile still didn't blink. He moved closer until his left eye stared into Gus's not an inch away.
Go on, Ball chuckled in that tainted, gravelly voice of his which reeked of graveyard meat. Go on, do something heroic, like headbutt me, you know, something crazy. Go on.
But Gus didn't. Instead, he squeezed his eyes shut and braced himself for that terrible hot or cold, or both, sensation that would come with being stabbed in the face.
Well, Jesus H, Bull grumped, the eagerness in his voice suddenly tepid.
Then a chortle of hyena laughter rose from the audience.
Scorched shit flicker pissed himself.
Gus realized it was true. His terror had grown to such proportions he hadn't even realized his bladder had had enough and just cut loose, saturating his fruit of the looms. Ball backed away in obvious disgust, his smile disappearing behind that monstrous duster of a beard. Those hell-bright gray peepers dimmed as he glanced down, and Gus saw that the man did indeed have lids. But then they flicked back up and beheld his captive with a disgust so raw, Gus thought his time on this depopulated planet had finally come to an end.
You fucking almost pizzled on me, Bull grumbled like a Kodiak coming out of hibernation. You dirty bird, you.
Bull stepped forward, slashing downward in an overhand chop, his knife parting the skin covering Gus's ribs and grazing five of them before the razor edge leaped off the last rung and missed the fluttering snare drum of his exposed stomach. The sound of pattering reached his stunned brain, and Gus wasn't sure whether it was from his bladder emptying itself or his blood. He glanced down and saw Ball's cut, one that would definitely need stitches, issuing a red river that positively gleamed against his pallid flesh. Gus panted, nearly passing out. The butt of the knife bounced off his nose, stunning him in a flash of black light and keeping him in agonizing reality.
You get to keep your eye. This day, Bull warned and ambled off toward a huge motorhome.
Gus winced and shifted, noting he was in a chuck wagon ring comprised of big RVs, some white, some tiger-striped, and he was hung from the hook-and-boom winch system of an old tow truck. A cluster of men surrounded him, five total, sitting in leather recliners or on lawn chairs. Each resembled something milked out of the ass end of some inbred clan of mountain folk. Heavy beards hung off unseen chins. Gold teeth glimmered. They laughed and shook their heads. Bull's little show of terror had greatly amused them all.
Well then, one of the hillbillies announced and stood up. Unlike the others, his was the only head shaven to the quick. A leather coat hung off gaunt shoulders. The coat flapped open, revealing a thick sweater, as well as a sheathed knife hanging off a belt.
Murray, get on up to the overpass. Time's a-wastin'.
Murray stood, a short wall of a man layered in winter clothing and topped off with a purple stocking cap. A set of black bike goggles regarded Gus with a sullen jiggle, then switched to the leather-clad speaker and back to Gus once more. Murray nodded and scuffed at the frozen dirt like a petulant school kid. A machete in a crude sheath slapped against his hip. Gus saw most of the men wore edged steel in such fashion, along with their tribal beards.
Bull, hang around here for a bit. You listening to me, son?
Gus focused on the man who had sent Murray on his way. Bull had parked himself in a recliner and leaned forward until his elbows rested on his knees.
What did we find in that SUV?
Nothing, Bull answered.
Nothing,
the leader asked, and regarded a silver-bearded bruiser sitting in a recliner.
The man had dick all, Silverbeard replied. K-bar knife in a boot, aluminum bat, firefighter gear, which I can see as being as practical as strapping a blast mat to your hide. Some magazines, water, noodles, small bottle of rum, and a sack of flour, for whatever reason I cannot fathom. Of all the things laying around to pick up, a fucking sack of muffin mix isn't that high on my grocery list.
Huh, the leader said in an is-that-so tone. He played with the rounded hilt of his knife.
Damn strange. Oh, and toilet paper, Silverbeard announced. Can find a use for that,
one man said, thumbing the hammer of a large revolver.
You might, but not old Murray, said another. I think Murray wipes his ass with the entire roll like he's whipping up cotton candy or something, just jams his fingers into the roll there and...
The speaker went through the motions, stirring up some groans and chuckles. The leader studied Gus.
You know something, Fireboy. We've been collecting tolls here on this strip of highway for a long, long time. And I think you are, in fact, the first person to come along and not be carrying anything of interest except the toilet paper. Sure, there were some folks that wheeled through that were too big for us to handle, but for the most part, everyone else we've stopped has had something. Makes me wonder if you're not hiding anything.
Not hiding, Gus grunted, feeling the cut's angry sting down his ribs, the blood outlining his exposed contours.
Looking for someone.
I'd say you fucking found someone.
Gus suffered through a few more breaths as the cold punished his nearly naked form. A thoughtful expression covered the leader's face as he meandered over to where his prisoner hung.
Who you looking for? He asked.
Gus hesitated, and a fist hammered into his exposed gut, ejecting all air from his lungs.
That, the leader stated while observing Gus gasping for breath, is for making me wait. It's as good as you're gonna get in this situation, and I'm not telling any lies here. You ain't pussy, and you ain't got nothing of value other than that knife and that tiny quart of rum. We waited all last night for you to come to, and we ain't waiting any longer. Really, you're just here now because of a dangerous combination of curiosity, boredom, and amusement. None of those feelings are your friends right now. You best answer when I question you, and maybe I won't take it into my head to do something cruel. Understand?
Yeah. That put a smile on the other man's face.
Better. Now, who you looking for?
A woman and two kids.
Really?
Yeah.
That's all. An old bag and two mouths. Boy and a girl?
Gus squinted in pained curiosity.
A few people traveled through here matching that description. The men with them paid the toll, so we let them through. We operate a fair business practice here.
Dark chuckles erupted all around. Bull scratched hard at his beard.
You failed to see the signs on the road, which is why we shot your ass off the highway. Anyway, tell you what. You're going to be our guest for the next while. If we get along, who knows, we might even let you go. Maybe even recruit you. Always looking for new talent.
Then he leaned in, his eyes narrowing.
If we don't get along, well, at best we'll kill you. At worst, Crazy Man Bowl over there will kill you. Then skull fuck you. Balls deep.
Gus panted, heart kicking, positively terrified and not trying to hide it.
So relax, the speaker said and smiled warmly.
He reached out and thumbed drying blood off Gus's face, not so very sweetly.
Hang in there.
Chapter 18. And hang Gus did, like a chunk of hairy meat under a cold sun. His arms burned to the point where he suspected circulation had been restricted. He stood on the tire rim, the steel gouging its cold brand into the bare soles of his feet. Every breath of early winter, however brief or soft, felt as scalding as a whip.
Blood, his mind confided in him. Keep the blood moving.
Gus had to smile at that. He realized he hung from the tow truck only if he bent his knees. If he stood straight, he could lift his arms above his head a half inch and enjoy some slack, a finger of wiggle room. And he made the most of it. He twisted his hands, touching the coarsely woven fiber with nearly bloodless fingertips. The men ignored his struggling, confident that the bonds would keep their prisoner in place. Gus had to admit they'd done a fine job. Even if he could somehow claw his way free of the rope, his arms would probably fall to his sides like a pair of beef hindquarters. Then there was Bowles cut, dried but stinging like a foot-long needle pounded into his skin and running a couple of hundred volts. His feet ached on the rim and had no relief there. Gus alternated between standing straight and hanging from his arms. Muscles he'd never known existed screeched with each movement. He tried separating his mind from his body, studying the area he was in. The overpass gang had parked their motorhomes on a dirt and grass clearing. He craned his head around. The raised slope of the highway loomed just behind, with guardrails reinforced by wood and sheets of metal. Gun ports dotted their length. One lane led into the assembled rig of trailers with a fire pit and an outdoor grill marking the center. Skimpy lawn chairs and more luxurious recliners rested near their owners' homes. A small flatbed trailer housed a crude wooden shed, enough to protect its treasure from the elements. The low purr of a gas generator emanated from within. Power cables ran to the RVs. All in all, it wasn't a bad setup in the least, as long as the gas lasted. Even Gus wondered how much longer the additives would prolong the life of the fuel. Time slowed, so each shivering breeze seemed like a day. Hollers from the gang occasionally blotted out the creaking of the rope. Ball appeared, scratched his crotch, something which Gus could relate to, and retired to one of the wheeled homes, slapping the door closed behind him. Some of the windows were tinted and dark, but others weren't, and Gus could see Ball glancing his way every now and again, just checking in. Around noon, the other gang members retired to their Winnebagos for what Gus believed to be lunch. Harsh laughter penetrated the white and striped walls at times, while his feet truly began to hurt while standing on the tire rim. He rested his head against one arm, shivering and enduring the knife-like pain in his shoulders, trying hard not to think of what provisions the gang members might have inside their luxurious walls. By mid-afternoon, Gus started identifying the men other than Murray and Bull through shouts and heated out-of-sight conversations. Some walked past him wearing scabbards filled with knives, the edged weapons hanging off their hips like badges of terror. Sidearms were slung into leg or chest holsters. R.J. Como was unquestionably the leader, and he wandered along the walls and gaps like a sidewinder with no rattle. He strutted, his head bobbing left and right with every step, leather jacket flung open and swinging, conjuring images of old gunslingers marking their territory, a manner Gus would have found amusing if he wasn't strung up like a plucked chicken. When Como barked, however, the others obeyed, suggesting a history where someone might have been made a bloody example as warning. Bull, however, reminded Gus of old episodes of The Muppet Show and the character of Animal. Nate Boone was a stick of an individual, resembling a walking cadaver who'd look more stylish in a mortuary sheet rather than the dusty denim tuxedo he wore. Gus couldn't tell if his hair was naturally brown or just filthy from the perpetual dust cloud hanging about him. Boone had a steely six-shooter hand cannon strapped to his left thigh. Whenever Boone came into sight, Gus's attention fixed on that weapon. Edgar made Gus nervous the moment he stepped into view. The man was another black-eyed hillbilly type wearing a blue bandana with a screaming eagle and a tight tourniquet around his forehead. A bulbous mole protruded from the man's right cheek, large enough that at one time Gus thought it was a healing gunshot hole. The only time he appeared, he did so with menace, as he leaned up against one corner of the tiger-striped Winnebago and leaned back, folding his arms. He stood there and studied Gus, unnerving him, the way a diver caught in a cloud of blood might feel with a great white swimming around. That session ticked off the seconds until Gus lowered his head and closed his eyes, hoping the monster would be gone when he peeked. The last was a mid-sized man called Prout, who might have been an overweight doughboy in a previous life. Prout wore the stupidest mohawk Gus had ever seen. None of the others made light of the gauche hairstyle, however. The guy seemed to be constantly picking his nose and flicking the results into the dirt. At lunch, he'd gone into his home, eaten, and emerged with a streak of yellow glop clinging to his sizable beard. Around late afternoon, with the shadows growing on the ground, Prout came down from the overhead pass and dropped into a recliner not 10 steps away from the tow truck. He grunted loudly upon sitting, enough to get Gus's attention. Prout leaned the chair back and pulled out a National Geographic that looked vaguely familiar. Prout made a scene, licking his thumb, and started turning pages. His expressions morphed at irregular intervals, flowing from mild boredom to genuine interest. At one point, a look of pure what-the-fuck covered his face, quickly followed by head-shaking and more page-turning. In the end, he left the prisoner alone. Sleep eventually took Gus.
"I said, hey!"
Gus lifted his chin and squinted miserably at Prout, who stewed in the recliner and regarded him like a schoolboy caught doing something he shouldn't be.
"Are you asleep over there?"
His shoulders ached, and he couldn't feel anything in his arms.
"No." "Good. You know something?"
Gus exhaled, and that little movement caused agony around his shoulders. His urine-soaked undershorts burned his skin.
"I never much liked National Geographic," Prout lectured. "Liked the pictures, you understand. But if I had a choice, I'd go with something that showed a little more skin, a little more bounce. But after all that's happened through the years, and maybe it's just boredom talking, but now I'm starting to like reading the articles. Never did that before. People change."
People change. True words. Gus laid his chin back down and shifted the minutest degree, wincing as he did, trying to get comfortable, or just to alleviate the stress in his shoulders, or even his feet. He knew it wasn't going to happen, though.
"Are you a firefighter?" Prout asked.
"Huh?
A firefighter?"
Where the question had come from perplexed Gus, and he wasn't in the mood for a Q&A to begin with.
"No." "You had that firefighter gear in your ride."
"What?"
"I said you had that firefighter gear in your ride. Great idea, in my opinion. I expect nothing could get through that hide. You know, the same company makes Kevlar. The older suits weren't as tough as yours, though. Yours is puncture-proof, and to a point, anyway. Bet nothing could bite its way through those layers when you had it on."
Gus didn't comment.
"You hear me?"
Gus did, but it was a single voice being heard over the twin loudspeakers of his shoulders. All he wanted was to be cut down, or if that wasn't possible, just left alone. That was all he wanted at that point, to be left to his suffering in peace. Prout's face became drawn. He stood with a loud groan, making the recliner work.
"You know, I'm getting tired of your attitude. Try to be civil here, and you don't have the time of day for me. I can take a hint."
Footsteps approached Gus. Though his head felt like a 50-pound bowling ball, Gus managed to raise it in time to see Prout's fist connect with his stomach. All the wind left him, and he hung there, spiraling to the right, eyes squeezed shut and unable to breathe. Prout spoke them, but the words washed over Gus's senses like rain speckling glass. That earned him another punch to the gut. Another followed. Breathing hard, Prout stood back after teeing off and belting a salvo into his captive's bruising midsection.
"What you doing, Dickie?" black-eyed Edgar rumbled, coming into the ring. "Having some fun with the prisoner?"
Slit-eyed and nasty-looking, Prout eased off and regarded the bandana-wearing woodsman.
"Cocksucker doesn't want to be conversational, so I figured a few fists would get him talking. Work any?"
Edgar stopped alongside him and inspected Gus like a trophy kill.
"Can't tell just yet. Having too much fun tenderizing, huh?"
Prout nodded.
"You want him to talk, there are better ways than punching. Cracking him anywheres might do more harm than good. For example, slug him one in the nuts, and well, he won't be chatting for an hour. Too sensitive."
"Yeah, I thought so," Prout agreed. "Why, hit him in the gut?"
"That's not bad," Edgar noted in a clinical tone. "But even then, you'll have to wait a bit before his diaphragm unlocks. Gotta have breath to say anything, right?"
"Yeah, you're right."
A light of understanding went off in Prout's eyes.
"So where do you suggest?"
"Well, if it was information we were trying to get out of him, I'd say lower him and put his head into a wash tub of water, or cover his face and pour water over it."
"Drown him?"
No, not that. What does the CIA call it? Waterboarding? Has a powerful effect on folks, gets them all kinds of social. But I'm old-fashioned. If I want information or just a conversation, I say bend things until they break. Or twist. Cutting is fine, too. Nothing like being helpless like Fireboy here and feeling a knife coast on down your ribs or whatever. The threat alone is enough to get most folks talking, even if it's just shit."
Gus studied Edgar with narrowed eyes, disbelief rendering him speechless.
"Course, that way's messy as hell, too. And you run the risk of bleeding him out. So stick with the other two, bend or twist."
Prout nodded, understanding.
"So no punching?"
Edgar took a contemplative breath, completely at ease with the conversation.
"Ah, hell, punch him if you want. Wail on him. I mean, whatever floats your boat, bro. Just that you have to wait for him to recover, right?"
As if to prove a point, Edgar reached up with fingers that might have been made of iron and pinched Gus's upraised triceps, hard enough to get a gasp of pain from the man. Edgar twisted it, as if attempting to rip it from the bone. A short whine erupted from Gus's bearded face, baring his incisors.
"See," Edgar said, "like that."
"I don't really get off on that torture shit," Prout said.
Edgar cocked a brow.
"You don't?"
"Nah. I mean, I'll hit the guy just to straighten him out, but I'm not into hurting just for the sake of hurting."
"Didn't know that about you, Ryan."
Prout shrugged.
"Well, if the urge takes you, that's how I'd do it."
Edgar sized up Gus's hanging form, studying his bonds and then his body, looking for God only knew what.
"Stomp on them feet, too," he eventually muttered and pointed. "Ain't nothing more painful than a good old-fashioned foot stomp. Target the toes. Small bones, easy to break. Painful as all fuck."
"Jesus, Corey," Prout said. "Where'd you learn this?"
Edgar's dark, disturbing eyes regarded Gus with no more emotion than a knob of rock. That monstrous mole dotting his right cheek resembled a mark left by a lit cigarette or a blowtorch.
"You go around the block a few times," the man drawled. "You pick up on things. Pavlov would ring a bell to get his dogs to salivate. Pain'll condition a subject in a similar manner, except faster. Some would argue, anyway."
Edgar smirked then, his mouth a furry line under that jungle of a beard. He reached forth and gripped the back of Gus's head, grabbed the fringe of hair growing there.
"Be a good dog, hear me?"
"Yeah," Gus answered. That pleased Edgar, and he released him.
"You still got some of that dried beef that last bunch traded?" Edgar asked Prout.
"I do. Planning on doing up a cooked supper, actually. Still got some of that powdered gravy, too. That shit doesn't go old.
Gravy, Edgar smiled, his mole making him wicked. Gravy sounds like a feast, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
The two men meandered off to a white Winnebago. An exhausted but relieved Gus watched them go, shivering from both the pain and the cold. He plunked his forehead against an arm and closed his eyes, locking himself away in darkness. In the evening, as the dark crept in and around the site like the Atlantic tide, four of the gang members gathered in Prout's Winnebago. The wind picked up, complaining in Gus's ear. Every so often, a burst of laughter spiked the walls of the home on wheels, and shadows moved past lit windows. The cold tightened its grip on Gus's bare skin, making him wish for heat of any kind, and freezing the long, ugly cut Bowl had made earlier in the day. His feet transformed into numb blocks of ice, and his shoulders barely spoke at all. He shifted and straightened at times, his body screaming. That was fine with Gus. Pain was a good thing in that case. He wiggled his fingers and toes, stood and moved his legs. Everything felt sluggish, nearly frozen but functioning. He wondered when the suffering would end. The men departed for their individual homes well after night had fallen, their shadows staggering between the RVs as if they'd drunk too much. A drink. A sip of anything would have hit the spot right then, would have thawed him from the inside out. A door slammed, and a dark outline appeared beyond the flatbed with the generator's shack. Another joined it, and they huddled out of sight before one retired, exclaiming,
"Fucking cold out here tonight!"
"Yes, it fucking is cold out here tonight." Only a snow flurry or two was needed to garnish the scene. The other figure came around the corner of the shack and approached Gus, boots scuffling along the frozen ground. It stopped four paces from him and stood there, studying.
"Comfy?" Como asked.
Gus barely had the juice left to raise his face.
"Hmm,"
the leader grunted and walked past. Metal tinkled, and a motor flared to life. Gus felt himself crumple to the ground, smashing a knee off the torturous edge of the tire rim he'd balanced himself on for most of the day. The knee split and bled immediately, as if it were a mouth spitting out bad wine. The ground shredded his skin like broken glass. Gus cried out, took the pain, and drew up his knees. His arms responded, but barely, still attached to the lower boom. A door opened and closed. An engine started up, grabbing Gus's attention seconds before the tow truck pulled ahead, stretching him out on the harsh earth. Then the red lights flared like demonic eyes at